comment that from Scarra to Fleming. Fleming trying to go around Kasnick. Oh, she's done so and gets the offload away. That is absolutely brilliant from England. Stretching the legs, Abigail Brown. Will she be caught? Race for the line. Brown, the captain for England, crashes down and gets the ball down. Was it a try?
The more you sweat in training, the less you'll bleed in battle. Hello everybody and welcome to another episode of the Sports for Champions podcast. Today I'm joined by Team GB's Rugby Sevens captain, Abby Brown. How are you, Abby?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. Thanks for joining us today. It's a great pleasure to have you here. So if you could start, could you tell us a little bit about how you got into rugby?
Yeah, of course. So when I was six, I used to kind of, you know, I'd do whatever a six-year-old would do. And my brother was playing down at the local rugby club at Clumpton. And I basically just got bored on a Sunday watching. And I just turned to my parents and I was like, I want to play. And kind of since that day, my dad took me to rugby. My mum would take my brother to rugby and kind of swap. I remember switching cars at one point because we had to go somewhere else. So, yeah, kind of just played with the boys up until I was about 12 and then had to play with the girls because that's kind of the age you had to change over. But back in the day, there was never really many girls in the local area, so we had to kind of fix a team together. My dad, bless him, he was amazing. He basically coached my team. But we used to go and pick up the girls because some people wouldn't be able to get to training and stuff like that, so just so that I could play on a weekend. So yeah, my dad was an absolute hero, kind of bringing together loads of girls, and I also just dragged all my mates to it as well, so they kind of hate me for it. But
you almost need someone like that when there isn't that platform, yeah, for you to go and play. How were the attitudes towards girls in rugby when you first started, do you remember?
Yeah, I kind of remember like one particular tournament where this guy on the boy on the other team was like, oh my god, I can't tackle a girl, like that, I can't do that. And the boys on my team responded with like, right, let's just give Ab the ball because she's going to score us all the tries. So it was a mixture. The people on my team didn't really care, like they just like cared if I was good or not, which I think helped teach me kind of actually just to be the best version of you, and kind of if I wasn't good enough, then they would not slate me, but they would slate me because I wasn't good enough, not because I was a girl. So yeah, I worked really hard to kind of be good and be the best person player I could be when I was younger. But I loved it. I loved playing with the boys. They were great crack, and like a couple of them now like stay in touch and stuff. So yeah, they're a good bunch.
That's brilliant. And do you remember, were you particularly athletic at that time? Were you playing any other sports or maybe in school?
Yeah, I literally played every sport growing up. Netball, basketball, I did swimming, I did tennis, like you name it. I was kind of out most evenings. Every weekend I was out. Like I remember when I was probably a little bit older, maybe 14, 15, and was kind of going through high school, and you're kind of going through that weird transition of like growing up and being a girl and all this kind of stuff. But I would always play rugby. I would always be that person, like play basketball with the boys. Like at lunchtime it'd be like, right, what game are we playing? Like, and all my friends wanted to just sit and just like chat, and I was like, no, I want to go play sports. So kind of went through that battle. But I do remember on a Saturday or a Sunday morning, I had rugby in the morning and then I had netball in the afternoon. And obviously going from rugby, it was like muddy, it was like gross. And I literally had to get in the car. I didn't even have time to shower. Wow. And went straight and put my netball dress on. I had like muddy knees and I was like on the court. And yeah, I remember all the girls being like, you've been at rugby today, haven't you? And I'm like, yeah, I have. Like trying to wipe with like baby wipes and stuff. So yeah, that was kind of interesting. But I mean, I wouldn't change it because yeah, I absolutely love sports.
I think on the eye test, it can look like a big sort of physically quite bruising game rugby, but it is quite technical. Do you first sort of remember that moment when you realised that you've really got a sort of technical talent for the actual game rugby?
Yes and no. I think when I got selected for kind of Southwest stuff, and kind of when you're 13, 14, you kind of go through divisional, you go for county stuff, and as I kind of progressed, I was like, oh, maybe I'm kind of good at this. And then like getting selected for like under-20s, England under-20s, and just kind of going to those and being selected to start and like things like that. I was just like, oh, that's kind of good. And like my dad always said to me, he was like, you've got something, like there's something about you, like you really understand this game, like you really get it. And like obviously when your dad says it, he's biased. So like, I'm like, you're biased, Dad. But kind of looking back at it, I'm like, well, maybe he was right. Like I did have something that perhaps like some of the other people didn't have necessarily. So yeah, it was a weird one. I think when you're selected and you're kind of going through the ranks, I guess, you get more confidence, and so then you're like, oh, maybe I am actually all right at this.
Yeah, it makes sense, I guess. I know you were selected, was it a decision that you had to make to go to the specialist sports college? Presumably you had friends off going doing A-levels at different places. I'm guessing it must have been a bit of a crossroads for you.
Yeah, so I was either to go to Exeter College, do A-levels and do the Netball Academy there, or I went to Hartbury College in Gloucester, which meant I had to move away from home and do academics, but with the rugby. And I vividly remember sitting down with my mum and dad, and we did a pros and cons list of both colleges, everything, and we just let it lie, just kind of like, let's talk about it, and then like just chew over the fat kind of thing. And there were so many cons for going to Hartbury, and there were so many pros going to Exeter, and it was like this one, and then just one day my friend was like, I'm gonna go to Hartbury, one of the rugby girls, and I was like, I am too. Like, I just was like, no, I can't not go, like I can't do that, even though the amount of cons was literally outweighed it so much. And then I just was like, let's just do it, let's just see what it's about. And that my dad was always like, the worst thing that can happen is you can just come home, like it's not a big deal, like it'll be fine, we'll support you. And I'm very, very fortunate, my parents are so supportive, and always have been, so I guess that kind of helped make the decision a bit easier.
It's a recurring theme, I think a lot of the athletes that we talk to here, supportive parents, yeah, runs through everybody really. And I think we all owe a lot to our parents in general, but I think especially in sport, it seems like. So you were playing at college, and I think you were picked up there by, was it the Bristol Bears?
Mm-hmm.
Is that to play 15s?
Yeah, so played 15s down at your local club. Like, if you want to progress, you kind of got to get, when I was like 18, kind of got to join a women's side. Mm-hmm. And they were the local premiership club at the time. So yeah, joined Bristol, had a great time, great season, and then got picked up through England because of that.
What was your position at that time?
Outside centre. So yes. Before I went to college, I played 10. Mm-hmm. So I played five half all the way through basically my childhood, which maybe helped with, like you're saying, that like technique, tactical side of things. Mm-hmm. Sorry. So like actually, because I was a decision-making player.
Yeah, so for people maybe who don't know, that would be like the quarterback role almost. An outside centre, that's more sort of running based a little bit. And then I know that when you play sevens now, you play hooker, which is a completely different role altogether. Can you tell us a little bit about those different roles and some of the different skills needed to do well in them?
Yeah, so obviously with being a centre in 15s, you need a bit of all sorts, but it is about that kind of playing off other people more so, whereas 10 you kind of pull the strings, so you put people through the hole or whatever it might be, whereas sense is probably the person that's going through the hole. If that makes sense, that's really whistle stop tour of that. But and then again with sevens, I've kind of played pretty much every position there is in sevens, but last year, just before Tokyo, they moved me to hooker because they were like, you've got an engine, like you can last. You kind of, my work rate is kind of my super strength. So like, I will always hit breakdowns. I'll like make sure I'm here, there and everywhere. I've got like a really good, very fortunate, have a fitness base, which some of my friends don't like me for, but yeah, it's very fortunate to have that. And then kind of you do a bit of like the dog work, I guess, which I love, the bit I love about sevens as well. But then you also are in positions on the pitch to really make an impact. So yeah, it's, sevens is a bit of everything. You need to just like have decision making, and it's got to be super quick and put people through spaces and good handling and all the other side of it. So yeah, that's where I think I found my love with sevens.
So you said you've got a fitness base. Is that something that you've kind of grown up with naturally, or is that something you've really worked on?
I have had it naturally, I will be honest. I don't know whether or not, because I did loads of sports growing up, but I was always the kid that did like 1500 and cross country and like things like that. I was always very blessed in that area. So it's, yeah, I definitely think it's more of a natural thing. But again, like I now, because I know it's natural, I like work even harder at it because I'm like, well, I know I can be good at it, you know?
Yeah, it makes sense.
So.
Can you tell us a little bit about that first call from England? Can you tell us how that came about and sort of your first cap, how that felt to represent your country?
Yeah, so when I first got capped with sevens, I remember sitting, I think I was at home and we'd just got back from a social sevens tournament and I was in the car, and my parents were like, I was like, I've got this call from someone, I'm not sure who it is. And obviously, it was the head coach basically being like, we want to take you away just to see what you're like about and give you a shot, really. And I actually had injured my hip, so I was like panicking, because I was like, what if I can't go, and all this kind of stuff. So, but yeah, that was that when I was quite young, that, so it's a loose memory, but the one with 15s, I remember it so well, because me and my friend who at the same college were expecting a call if we were going to be selected into the squad or not for the Six Nations in 2015. And we actually had a lecture, but I remember being like, we can't go until we've had this call, like, because what if we get it halfway through and all this kind of stuff. So we like sacked the lecture off. Sorry to my teachers if anyone's listening. Sacked that off, and then basically just sat in our room and we just like stared at the, like, our phones, and like we both kind of got phone calls simultaneously. And me and my best mate were basically both selected to do the Six Nations. So off the back of the 15s girls just winning the World Cup in 2014. So, I mean, it was a huge honour, like a big challenge. We were like 18, 19. So it was like quite big boots to fill. And kind of just embraced the whole opportunity with it. It was definitely tough. Like, it was really hard because we'd been in the situations where we'd only really done like a year of senior rugby. And now all of a sudden they want us to go play for England against Wales. And you're like, what, like, what's going on? But yeah, it was super cool.
How was the jump in the level, playing international rugby compared to club and then obviously college rugby before that?
Yeah, I think it was huge. Like, I don't think I realised how big a jump. You know, we had under 20s, but even under 20s to seniors was just a massive leap. Because you're not just playing with like three age ranges, you're literally playing with
just the best of the best.
The best of the best and any age over 18. So it was hard. It was really hard.
What's the biggest difference in terms of, is it like the physicality or the skill level or everything?
I think a bit of everything, but probably the skill level was the hardest bit, because everything's then faster. So, and everything's harder, everything's stronger, everything's hits hard, everything hurts more, like, you know. So it's it's everything accumulated into one, I think. But yeah, I mean, it's, you kind of get used to it, but definitely the first season I had a lot of bumps and bruises.
Bit of an adjustment period. So if I could fast forward a little bit, I know you had quite a difficult qualification process for Tokyo. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so in the lead up to Olympics, you have to come top four in the World Series. So we do a World Series every year. So it's like you go away like once a month to like a new place. We obviously didn't do that. We were kind of ranked, 2019 this was, we were ranked between 5th and 8th. And we basically went to a standalone tournament where you have to win the tournament to qualify. The teams we had to beat were like Russia, Spain, Ireland, France, and they were all ranked above us. Like, France basically should have done it on the World Series. Like, there was, they were like the team to beat. And we actually ended up with like a really hard run into it. And like, just everything about the tournament, like, we just shouldn't have won. Like, the people we had, probably, like, we had a great team, like the team itself was great, but we obviously weren't clicking that whole season. And we just, like, backs against the wall, we were definitely the underdogs going into it, I think. those teams definitely should have beaten us, but we basically managed to beat Ireland in the quarterfinals, France in the semi-finals, and we beat Russia in the final. Sorry.
You're right.
Which, obviously, for us, it was, like, amazing. And definitely, yeah, one thing that we had so much stuff going on off-pitch. So our coach was changing. There was just loads of political stuff that happens in sport that was going on. It was, like, the end of our season, so contracts were being renewed and everything like that. So, yeah, lots going on, and we definitely shouldn't have won it, but we absolutely smashed it. And definitely one of the, like, the best achievements like I've ever done.
That is amazing. It does seem to be a bit of a recurring theme around England's women rugby, where you might not have the best season, but kind of when it matters most, you do seem to be able to pull a result out of the bag. Is that something that you guys are aware of yourselves?
Yeah, especially like the 15s girls are a bit different. They've been absolutely smashing it for the last 2-3 seasons. And now at their World Cup out in New Zealand. But for the Sevens program, it's definitely been that case. We've had a kind of a real tough tough ride with things that pretty much my whole career, like every season's been a bit different. We're constantly changing squads like yearly, which if you look at it, like we're performing against teams that have been together for 6-7 years. So it's kind of, you know, you're trying to battle with someone that's already got that experience, which is really hard. It is really difficult because the sevens program's been so inconsistent. However, I do believe that when we get some consistency and we get like the funding and the backing, the facilities and everything that goes with it, and all the political stuff is kind of dealt with, then we perform really well on the pitch. But it's just when everything, there's so much that goes on behind the scenes that kind of impacts then how you play, which has been unfortunate for the sevens because it's kind of had taken a bit of a back step. But it is going to get there,
hopefully. It is so important to all team sports across the board, really, to have that consistency and to sort of to give you the platform to play. Because if you know sort of who you're going to be playing with and you've had like good preparation leading up to it, that gives you then a bit of freedom to actually go and express yourselves and enjoy your game. I do think it's the case that you can only pull it out of the bag so many times before sort of the better, more prepared teams will eventually come out on top. So I know you're probably a little bit disappointed with the end result at the Olympics, but obviously going to Tokyo under quite strange conditions as well. Can you tell us a little bit about the actual games?
Yeah, it was very odd. You know, COVID was like super strict. everywhere we went, it was like masks on, testing. We actually got a scare the opening ceremony night. We were going to go to the opening ceremony, we were going to go into the village, it was all going to be amazing. And as soon as you're in the village, it was like, cool, you're good. Like, even if you got COVID, like, but you didn't have any symptoms, like, you're fine. Like, you kind of, you're almost like safe. It was just getting into the village.
Yeah.
And one of our teammates basically on the bus, and it was so hot. I remember it being so hot. And obviously, we've got all these masks on. Got outside the village, and they were like, so-and-so, like two of the girls, like, can you come to the front? And we were all sat there like, what's going on? Like, no one was really telling us anything. And all of a sudden you see the two girls at the front, everyone, all the staff and who were at the front, moved back towards us. And we were like, oh my god, they've got COVID. Like, they've got COVID. So we're sat there, and I kid you not, we were sat there for 2 hours. We were literally sat there for 2 hours while they're trying to sort, because they were like, they thought it was like a false positive. They were like, there's no way you can get COVID right now. Like, it, we were in like, honestly, like a bubble. Like, we were in the safest environment, like, to a point we're having food and we'd have like a mask up between us here, like, wow. Everything was like basically like a big sheet, and like, you were just eating, like, you're eating with people but you weren't. It was so bizarre. And I mean, it was necessary for what they thought, so absolutely. And you kind of just, yeah, fine, do whatever you have to do. But yeah, so we got a scare, we came back, we had to isolate all in our rooms, like, food got brought to like our rooms, and like, we then had to, the people had to retest, we had to retest, and then it was like, okay, next day out, actually you're fine and you can just go to the village. So it was definitely a close call.
Yeah, that's wow. For sure. That's obviously not ideal preparation, but what would you normally be doing in the lead up to a tournament? I mean, obviously not just sat in your room isolating, but presumably you'd be ticking over, or you're going for any skills work, or what would you normally be doing?
Yeah, to be fair, it wasn't too bad because we weren't training the next day, so it was kind of like, it worked out all right. But often or not, there you're like off days to relax or whatever, and actually we were traveling really sorry about this cough, by the way. So you're gonna enjoy editing this. What were we saying about the traveling and stuff? Prep wise, we would usually have longer as well, so because of COVID we actually only had 6 months before Tokyo leading up to it to be a squad. So however many people invited to be in the squad, 24 I think it was, and only 13 went. So you're cutting that, obviously, literally in half. So, it was very challenging kind of 6 months, because also we were in COVID times, we were in our own rooms, we were in camps, but in our own rooms, everywhere was masks.
It
was
just disruptions everywhere.
Yeah, and I think the thing is, what, going in Tokyo, obviously, like, the one thing that was a real shame is that no one could come and watch. Not necessarily just families and stuff. Like, obviously, that was really sad, because I would have loved, like, my family to be there. my teammates' families, but actually the people of Japan weren't even allowed to come, which they were gonna do. And I was like, that's the bit, actually, like, you can just invite schools and stuff like that, like, and that it wouldn't really matter. It would matter because you'd want your loved ones there, but it wouldn't matter as much. But they stopped all of that, so it was very different, very different, but it was, yeah, it was amazing at the same time.
I'm sure at the next games it'll make up for it, and I think obviously one of the biggest parts about sports is the participation of the crowd, and obviously the biggest sort of sporting event in the world at the Olympics, then it's a real shame to miss out on that, but I'm sure it'll be put right in the future.
Hopefully.
Can you tell us a little bit about where you think women's rugby is at the moment? Obviously, we've seen great success in the football over the summer, and things really do seem to be changing there, so just interested to get your opinion on it.
Yeah, so women's sport for me is changing. You know, the football girls did an amazing job, but they did an amazing job because they were put on a platform and that people could watch it and it's accessible. And I think that's the difference, is why it's kicked off, is because it was accessible. You know, people have been playing football, people have been playing rugby, like, we've been playing it for years. It's just not been accessible. Like, the girls, Six Nations, 15s, have really got a big backing at the moment. There was loads of people at their Six Nations games, and they took it all over the country. Like, it was amazing. Like, tens of thousands of people, like, I think one of the games was like 15,000 people were like there to watch it. And it was just, that for me, I was like, oh, it's not just my mum and dad going to watch these kind of games anymore. It's like, it genuinely is like a family game. There's loads of kids, and I think that's what is amazing about it, is that it is getting there. And obviously, when a team does well, you get even more backing and you get more accessibility. So it's credit to the players, I think, in the football team and the girls out in the World Cup at the moment, who I'm sure, touch wood, they will bring it home and they'll get that World Cup, because they've worked so hard and they are the people to beat. And it's credit to the players, I think, to go... credit to the players to be actually like, we want this to be better. We want it to be, you know, accessible. We want it to people to follow our journey, for you know, brands to go, oh, actually, let's get behind that. And I think it is getting there. I think for us, for the Sevens, it's really hard because we play all over the place. So if you're playing in Canada and the time difference is 6-7 hours, like, having a game at 2 a.m. just isn't really that accessible. But I think there's definitely something missing with Sevens, because we do everything alongside the men as well. So it's not even like the men get better than we get. It's generally like, how do you access Sevens more? There's something that needs to be done with that. But in terms of women's, like, growing and for rugby in this country, it's huge. And like, there's under 13s, under 15s, under 18s. There's so many different sections now within women's sport, women's rugby, sorry, that is only going to get bigger and better.
Yeah, it's really positive, and it's great to see. It's definitely great to see more and more girls getting involved, which obviously is only going to bolster the sport for the future. The better the talent coming through, and then the more likely they are to actually put it on TV and to give people the opportunity to take part, and then obviously it just snowballs from there. Yeah. Do you think there's anything in particular that motivated you to try it? Because obviously there's not, there wasn't really too many role models, and like you said, there wasn't many girls in the area playing whatsoever. Do you think there's anything in particular that really pushed you to really follow the rugby path, as it were?
I think I always wanted to be better. Like, I've always, like, my drive and stuff to just keep being better and at what I do and be happy doing it. Me and my dad's always like, as long as you're happy, like, it doesn't matter. And I think it's so true. And every time I played sport or I played rugby, I was just happy. I was happy doing it. So then I was like, well, if I'm enjoying it and I'm kind of good at it, like, I can be better at it as well. So I think that definitely pushed me to be like, okay, cool, I want to just keep being better. I want to, you know, strive for the next thing. And kind of the environment I'm now in, it's like, how do you keep, you're never satisfied. So you're never fit enough. You're never strong enough. You're never, and it's always, there's always this kind of clock that's ticking, because you're never where you want to be. And I don't know if you ever will be. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but probably more recently after COVID, I've just learned to just enjoy the journey. So like really have enjoyment in everything I do along the way, rather than just going, okay, that one big goal at the end. Actually, let's just enjoy everything in between. Enjoy day to day, like live a happy lifestyle, live a healthy lifestyle. And then if that then big thing comes, then that's great. But if not, I'm enjoying it as I go, you know?
Yeah, I think it's so much easier to put in the hard work if you're just enjoying the process, like you said. How do you see, you said early on that you were quite naturally talented towards the sort of things that you need to be good at rugby. How do you see the roles of talent and hard work playing against each other?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because I think if you don't work hard, you can have all the talent in the world, but you're never going to get anywhere. but again, if you work really hard, but you have no talent, it's, you know, you're kind of fighting against a brick wall. So I think it definitely is hand in hand, but I do think if you work harder, like talent, you will learn talent, because you're willing to try, you're willing to get better, you'll do anything you can to be the best passer, the best tackler, even if you're not extremely talented in that area. And I think that's the thing I love about rugby, it's that we say rugby is for all, and it really is, because you can have such a variation of body types, of like what you look like, where you're from, and all the kind of bits in between. And there is a place really for everyone, and you don't necessarily have to look a certain way or be a certain way. You can just be whatever you want to be. But majority of not, like people I've been with, that like if you work hard, you succeed. If you don't, you don't, but you're also happy, because you're not willing to work hard, you know? Mm. So, yeah, I think a bit of both, if that answers your question.
It makes sense. And how often are you training at the moment?
At the moment, it's actually my off-season, so I'm not training.
Yeah.
But usually we would train pretty much every day. We'd have probably two, maybe 3 days off a week, if we're lucky. But, yeah, you're in the gym, you're doing your fitness, or you're doing, like, rugby sessions. So it's... Or if we're in camp, we have... if we're in camp, we've got meetings, and various different things to attend, so it's definitely full on.
How does it work out in terms of like gym work compared to like ball work or just running? How do all them kind of fit together?
Yeah, it varies like within the season, so like probably like your pre-season before competition stuff even starts, your fitness, you go in the gym more, you're probably four times a week in the gym, you're doing more running.
Mm.
As well as like skills and rugby stuff, whereas as soon as competition stuff comes, you drop all that down and you just do more rugby stuff. So towards the back end of the season, we had loads of competitions and we were probably in the gym once, maybe twice a week with really short sessions, whereas we were on the pitch quite a bit. But then as soon as then, like I said, the a week out before competition, you're only out on the pitch for like half an hour, 45 minutes, you're in the gym for half an hour, and then that's kind of it, because you're peaking, you're like maintaining then, because you've done all the hard throughout the season. So it definitely changes, yeah, and through your aerobic, anaerobic, all that kind of stuff throughout, yeah, I don't know how, they plan it so well, but over my head.
Nice. And then in terms of nutrition, is that something that you take quite an active role in, or is it... Does that get given to you in terms of meal plans and stuff?
Yeah, so I have to like kind of have that active role. It's definitely something that I probably need to get better at, want to get better at, and definitely an area that I think it's really difficult, because for us, if you can't, I don't believe you can maintain like a really good, really strict kind of diet throughout the whole year, because it's just not possible. And especially with women, obviously we go through the menstrual cycle, so you've got all of those kind of things that play a big impact in that. And I think you kind of have to, it's so individual, but I do think there's probably a piece of that. As sevens players, we don't eat enough, because what we're doing, how hard we're working on the pitch, we probably don't eat as much as we probably should be eating to actually replenish that, let alone just live as a normal human. So yeah, there's definitely a bit in that. And definitely we don't actually have like a nutritionist or anything, but it's something that moving forwards, like I'm going to help try and get the squad to have, and because I think it's so important, and if you don't know, then how do you know, you know? It's always that classic saying, you don't know what you don't know. So and especially we've got quite a lot of young girls in our squad that probably need a bit of guidance with that.
Yeah, the world of sports only recently changed to incorporate that kind of stuff, but it is so important to obviously fuel your engine, as it were.
Yeah.
There's a lot to remember there. Do you think that the life of an athlete is tough compared to maybe other professions?
It is tough. I think it's really difficult because everyone's like, your dream job, you've got your dream job. And like, it is, like, don't get me wrong, it really is. But it also is hard work. Like, it's, I don't just, you know, turn up to work and it's like, okay, cool, I finished the day at 4. Like, it's a lifestyle. And I believe that when you play sport professionally, it is a lifestyle, it's not a job. Although it's probably not the toughest, I'm sure there's definitely tougher ones and people work extremely hard in their own profession, but yeah, it's definitely a lifestyle choice, which can be hard.
Did you have a favourite sporting hero growing up?
Yeah, my kind of hero is probably Serena Guthrie. She's a netball legend. She played centre at the time, and that was the position I used to play. And she was just unreal at netball. You know, her fitness was next level. She really kind of stood out for me as like someone that worked really hard and kind of obviously got the reward that she deserves.
That's brilliant. And then, do you have a favourite sporting quote?
I do have a quote. It's about, hopefully I get it right, life isn't about waiting for the storm to pass, it's learning to dance in the rain.
That's brilliant. Yeah. And then, do you think that that's something that you apply maybe to your sport? Obviously that's a big life quote, but do you think that's something that do you ever have to weather the storm in rugby and that kind of
all
comes
the time
to mind?
All the time. And I think that's why I like that quote, is that you're always going to get stuff thrown at you, especially in rugby, especially in the environment I'm currently in. And you know, it's a absolute roller coaster ride. Like, I always talk about like the roller coaster ride, especially in sevens, and even to a point of how when you play over a weekend, it's like a roller coaster of emotions. So like, it kind of impacts in everything I do. And yeah, kind of, that's the whole piece of enjoying the journey. That's that learning to dance is the enjoying part.
Does being an athlete make you a better person?
I believe so. Yeah, I think it definitely gives you your values and it tests your morals. It tests your what you're about as a human, but it also allows you to understand someone else, I think. You know, you really put, when you're tested and you're kind of backs against the wall with a team and you're basically going to fight, you really learn a lot about yourself in those situations, but also other people. And I think if you can keep being better as a person, then you're definitely going to be better as an athlete.
So obviously, as the Sevens captain, you're selected for a reason. Can you tell us a bit about why you think that might be?
It was an interesting one. When I first got asked to be captain, it was kind of like, I think you would be good at this in the kind of, not necessarily then, but like in the long run, like, oh, you'd be really good at this. And I was like 20. I'd only been in the squad a season. And I just was like, okay. And I definitely made some mistakes along the way, you know, tried to be that person or this person or do it this way. And it just wasn't right. It wasn't right for me. And I think I really think about the people, like, I put people before myself, which is a good thing, but also can be a negative sometimes in sport. But I think I'm good at kind of understanding where the squad is at. So I've got a good feel for it. So like, I know if something's not quite right or whatever. And I think it's also helped me to really understand, like I was saying about my morals and stuff, but like what I believe in it to be right or wrong or whatever, and fair. If I don't think something's fair, like, I will say it. I will just be like, no, that's not okay. Even if you're a coach or whoever you are or play or whatever, I've kind of gained that, I guess, confidence to go, actually, no, like, we need to stand up for this because that's not okay. Or even go the other way and go, that was really good. Like, we need to make sure we keep doing this, you know? So I've definitely kind of got a bit of an act of it. But I'm not sure I saw it at the time. I think I was just like a rabbit in headlights when I first was captain. But yeah, I think hopefully now the girls think I'm all right.
That's brilliant. And then, does that mean that you give a little pre-match talk or anything like that?
Yeah, always give a pre-match talk. Kind of don't really have anything I normally go to. It depends on the mood or the game we're about to play, who we're about to play. Sometimes you don't need to say a lot. I'm a firm believer of less is more, and kind of lead by actions, like, you know, how I am as a player and what I play like and stuff like that, rather, and how hard I work, rather than, you know, giving a 15 minute speech isn't really me. But yeah, hopefully the girls appreciate it. And I like to do little things like always high five the girls before we go out and just like little things like that to know that I'm kind of with them on this kind of journey, but also what we're about to go and do.
I think so much of it is about settling your team before the game. How do you feel before a game? Do you feel nervous? Or
depends what kind of game it is. I've learned to kind of not feel that nervous for games anymore, and it's a weird one, but I think it's because I'm so focused on the team, and I'm so focused on, okay, what are we going to go and do? The coach just said these are the 3 points. How can I then remind the girls, right, this is the 3 points, and like constantly, rather than think, okay, how do I feel about this game? There's a couple of games like recently I've felt really nervous for, but it's because of like the environment and the competition it was for and things like that. So it's a hard on managing your own like nerves, but knowing that I'm sure other people feel just as nervous, even probably more nervous than I'm feeling. So it's kind of like, okay, how do I then help them manage that? And I co-captain the squad with Meg Jones, and she's amazing as well. We're very different captains, but I guess it's kind of easier when there's someone else to kind of lean on.
No, it works, yeah. And then in terms of, would you have any advice for a young person maybe looking to start their career in sport, and then maybe even if there's something specific to rugby?
Yeah, I think just give sport a go. Like, give every sport a go, especially if you're a kid, like, because you never know what you might be good at or what you might love more or whatever. And I think the biggest thing for me, especially when you're growing up, is like the people you meet. Like my best friends. My best friends are definitely... Sorry.
Okay.
My best friends are definitely who I've made through sport. So I think it's give things a go, like try it out. And especially if you want to get into rugby, like, just go down to your local club and just ask about it. Pete, the way it's going at the moment, like little boys, little girls, like it's just getting so much momentum. So just try it. Try it is the biggest thing for me, I think.
Brilliant. And then what are you looking forward to in the future, maybe for your team and then for women's rugby in general?
Yeah, so looking forward to kind of moving to GB. We're moving to GB from England this season, and then on to Paris in 2024 is the big goal. But I guess more just enjoying the journey again. It's a couple of busy years for Sevens, and hopefully off the back of the World Girls, hopefully going to win the World Cup, I think it's just going to bring so much more momentum in England. So yeah, we're looking forward to the next few years.
Well, best of luck with that, and we'll all be watching here at Sports for Champions, and I'm sure everybody will be watching at home. Thank you very much for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
No, you're more than welcome. And thank you to everyone who's watching at home. It's been another great episode of the Sports for Champions podcast, and we'll see you next time. Thank you. Hi guys, hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, be sure to leave us a like and a subscribe, and check out all our other videos for some more great interviews and content. Bye.